All right. Well, we're just going to give it a go today and see how things turn out. There were just two things that I wanted to bring up and talk about, so I'm not even sure how long this podcast is going to last. And after all, it is Saturday afternoon, and I have a social agenda that I need to tend to. So, but there were a couple things on Friday that I wanted to just do a quick recap of. Actually, one was Thursday, I think, and the other was Friday. Thursday, we had earnings from Herbalife, and the company reported better than expected EPS and revenue, but then came out and lowered their guide. So naturally, after the stock cratered, maybe like 8% after hours, or no, it wasn't even that. Let's see, it was probably down, it was down $4 or $5 at times. Yeah, so maybe it was down like 8% after hours after they put out the report. It promptly shot back up and went up, closed the week on Friday at 85.63, which is up 250 for the day on a terrible earnings report. And, you know, this is, I don't know what this is a product of. I don't know if this is a product of having a low float and being able to point to where a lot of the shares are and basically just, you know, putting a noose on the supply for Herbalife stock, or if this is a product of just people that, you know, are continuing to bet on the short squeeze thesis, even though Ackman now is positioned through derivatives and not through being short the stock. So that would be, I think, partially misguided. I think that was like a legitimate thesis for the last couple of years, just trying to squeeze him out of his position, which, you know, people may do, but he said publicly he's not going to come out and talk about it anymore. So it's not like by getting him out, they're gonna turn off the sieve of negative press from him. And certainly a derivative position expiring worthless probably shouldn't have much to do on the common equity, with the exception of whoever the counterparty was on the derivative bet probably did some hedging somehow, and so there may be some trading associated with that. I don't really know. I'm not an expert in institutional, like, over-the-counter derivative trades, but that would be my guess. And so anyways, of course, on Friday, Tim Ramey, who is the analyst that's covering Herbalife, who has been so bullish it hurts for the last, you know, 4 years. There's no problem. There's no business model problem. The FTC is not going to do anything. This is a guy who said on the air on CNBC a couple years ago, injunctive relief is off the table, you know. And the next time Scott Wapner had him on to speak to him, he didn't seem to hold his feet to the fire on that comment. Hey, Tim, you came on CNBC and you said injunctive relief is off the table. And in fact, what happened was not only a $200 million fine, but injunctive relief as well. And if you want, for a second, we can just talk about why the morning of the FTC investigation conclusion was a piece of masterful PR spin for Herbalife, because, you know, the facts of the case are that the FTC had a really serious complaint against the company, and they alleged that they were doing basically everything that Bill Ackman and other short sellers had accused them of doing. Herbalife's lawyers, I'm guessing, you know, made it part of the conditions of the settlement to not use the words pyramid scheme in the complaint. So, as you know, Edith Ramirez was questioned on that after during the press conference, you know, she came right out and said, you know, the word pyramid scheme does not appear in our complaint. And then when she was questioned further by somebody in the audience who was lucid and who said to her, you know, pretty much what you're alleging here in the complaint is that they're a pyramid scheme, you know, isn't it? And the company had come out that morning, or somebody had come out and leaked to Benzinga and linked to the Wall Street Journal the narrative that the FTC had found the company to not be a pyramid scheme, which is simply and wholly untrue. And that's not what happened. And so when Edith Ramirez was questioned on this, she answered the question by saying they were not determined not to have been a pyramid. Right? Just let that one sink in. Somehow, the headline hits the wire early in the morning on the day that the FTC settlement happened. And the headline is, FTC determines Herbalife not to be a pyramid scheme. Company will pay $200 million fine. So to an outside observer, what does that look like? It looks like they've been cleared and they've gotten, as Icahn said in his one interview, you know, a clean bill of health. I think they're going to get a clean bill of health from the FTC. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, look, Icahn and the Longs have certainly won in terms of the stock price. Investment-wise, there's been some great financial engineering on the stock that has lowered the share count and has, you know, tied up a lot of the stock. So the supply has come down, and certainly the stock's at all-time highs. So congratulations on the win there, guys. With that said, it doesn't seem to me that Carl Icahn understands a fucking thing about this company still to this day, with the exception of he doesn't like Bill Ackman. And he has made a number of comments, the first of which, of course, was getting the ticker symbol wrong on live television. You know, do I think HALF could be the mother of all short squeezes? Well, of course I do. You know, it's like, great, what company is that? Because Herbalife's ticker symbol is HLF. So what the fuck are you talking about? You know, well, it gives a lot of jobs to Spanish people. Dude, what are you talking about? This is not 1880. Like, you sound like, John Rockefeller's grandfather explaining to John Quincy Adams the intricacies of, you know, building the world's first railroad. You know, it's gonna employ a lot of Spanish people. Oh, it's great. Well, we'll build the rail down in Mexico, you know. And, you know, throughout the entire series of this thing, while I know a lot of people don't like Bill Ackman, he's on the facts. I mean, I think he's been right. I mean, I think he's been 100% right. And so the FTC complaint confirmed that. Yet, when the settlement was announced, the headline, I think Dow Jones ran it first, but don't quote me on that. The headline was, FTC determines Herbalife not to be a pyramid scheme. So what is this? This is great and masterful PR work from the company, which, to their credit, I think they have done throughout the course of this campaign. I think, but for some of the stupid kind of, like, you know, putting up the Bill Ackman website and things like that, I mean, I don't really think that does anything aside from help maybe your lobbying efforts to some people on Congress that are trying to familiarize themselves with what's going on and don't really understand it. You know, I just don't think that they made too many mistakes from a PR perspective. And look, it's my opinion that the truth about this company is on the side of those who are critical of it. And so if I'm correct and, you know, the truth is that the company is operating illegitimately or was operating illegitimately, then what do you need to have on your side? You have to have everything but the truth. You have to have a great dog and pony show to try and defend yourself. You got to have great PR. You got to go on the offensive. You know, it's like Scientology. You know, they get criticized by somebody for being, you know, this insane cult, and then all of a sudden, you know, you go to click on an ad on YouTube, and it's like, do you know the real facts about Leah Remini? You know, Leah Remini strangled a kitten in 1982, you know? And so, I don't know, for me, I feel like when, this is like the art of war, right? When you have the truth on your side, and you're going into battle, and you're confident that, you know, you have the facts as a tailwind, you don't necessarily need to go out and on the extreme offensive or go ad hominem. And to Ackman's credit, you know, while he certainly made some missteps, I think everybody would agree in the way that he presented his facts. I think for the most part, he did it in a relatively calm and calculated way. The problem is that he just went so into depth on some things, like that Nutrition Club presentation, which he hyped up so much, like he was going to deliver concrete evidence of fraud, like a, you know, a photograph or a internal document that says we are a pyramid scheme. And the fact is he didn't deliver that. So, you know, he made some PR missteps of his own. And all of those things together, combined with the fact that, you know, the stock really has been gripped up and is sitting with, you know, you can turn around and point to probably half the outstanding shares very easily, if not more. They've done a very good job. Now, the question is with this earnings report, you know, the company was guiding for a volume point increase this year of, I forget what it was off the top of my head because I don't have my notes in front of me, but they were guiding for a volume point increase this year. Volume points are the like purest way to gauge the business when you strip away all the esoteric terms and members, preferred members, discount members, some products, sale products, royalty overrides, distributor allowances, blah, 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 and all this shit. When you strip away all that stuff, volume points tell the tale. They tell you how much new product is being ordered and is leaving Herbalife on its way to distributors. So it's a very pure way to gauge the business, even purer than revenue, I would say, because it's a gauge on the demand for the product in kind of like its purest way. And it doesn't include revenue from anything else that they might be tucking in there, these success training seminars, whatever. So if you look at volume points, you know, they had guided for a volume point increase, I think, of 2 to 3% this year, something to that effect, but it was a low single-digit volume point increase, and they finished the year down 3.6% in terms of volume points. And let's just take a look. I've got the stats up right in front of me, right? So fourth quarter volume point metrics. North America down 7.3%. All right. Mexico down 8.4%. South and Central America down 6.6%. These are year-over-year comps for Q4. China, I think they had an easy comp, so China was up 9.6%. But for the year, for the quarter rather, year-over-year, Q4, year-over-year total volume points, they were down 1.8%, all right? So that is not a business that is growing, at least not in the way that they want you to think that they're growing, which is through legitimate product sales. For the year, for fiscal year 2017, year over year, volume points were down 12% in North America, okay? So to me, that's definitive proof that the consent order is making a difference, and there was some language in the 10K that said as much too. Asia Pacific was up 120 basis points. EMEA was up 3.7%. Mexico was down 4.8%. South and Central America, again, also down double digits, 10.4%. And China eked out a gain of 1.4% in volume points for the year. And again, I think China had some easier comps in the back end of the year. The worldwide total for volume points year over year for the company was down 3.6%. Okay? So you can look at add backs and you can look at non-GAAP numbers and you can look at this and you can look at that and you can look at the share count decreasing. But at its core, at the very core of this business, volume points were down 3.6% for the year, okay? On a year where they guided for volume points to be up. Like I said, it was low single digits. So to me, I mean, it was another quarter of what I think are disappointing results under the surface that eventually are going to rear their ugly head when it comes to the valuation and the stock price. They posted a GAAP loss. The company, due to an adjustment for a tax liability or a deferred tax asset, I think that they had. I don't have it right in front of me. I'm just guessing, so don't quote me. Do your research elsewhere, people. But I think it was like a deferred tax asset that they had, and due to the tax rate getting cut, you know, they had to take a charge on that. So they actually posted a GAAP. I don't know if you guys remember GAAP, but it's actual accounting with the real numbers of how the company actually earned for the quarter. They posted a GAAP loss of something like 83 cents for the quarter. So if your main question is, did the company make money last quarter? The answer is no. But nobody really seems to care. You know, the stock was up $2.50 again. Tim Ramey came out. And I love this. I love this, guys. This is the kind of shit that is going to keep me in business with listeners. This is completely un-Herbalife related. I mean, the example has to do with Herbalife, but shit like this happens all the time on the street. And this is the kind of stuff where people just scratch their head. You know, Tim Ramey lowered his EPS forecast for 2018 from $6, okay, to $5.15 for the year. But maintained his $120 price target because, what the fuck is 85 cents? You know, it's like in that movie Trial and Error when she's talking about, I don't know, maybe it's an old comedy movie, but they bring in this stupid expert witness to talk about the difference between sugar and cocaine. And they're trying to create an insanity defense for a guy who is a sugar addict. And their asinine argument that they're coming up with is that sugar is like cocaine, and this guy just can't control himself when he's on sugar. So they bring up this, like, stupid, floozy, quack doctor who studied in, you know, Madagascar or something and is, like, an herbal healer. And she comes up as an expert witness, and she's got the two chemical compounds there, one for sugar and the other one for cocaine. And she says, as the court can see, you know, the give or take a nitrogen, this man's on cocaine, you know. And the plaintiff counsel gets up and she's like, doesn't the chart show that, you know, the difference here is two oxygen atoms and three hydrogen atoms and two nitrogen atoms? And, you know, they looked very much similar when you wrote them out on paper, but they're molecularly, they were completely different. And this woman's like, yeah, you know, but how big is an atom? And I feel like that's what Tim Ramey's doing, you know? What's 85 cents, you know? 85 cents, it's nothing. You know, I got 85 cents in my couch cushion right now. Except for when you're talking about 85 cents per share. And then you're talking about the multiple expanding from, you know, you're going from a forward PE of 20 to a forward PE of, what, 23 or 24, I guess, right? So what's the case? I mean, is this a company that needs to be... First off, does any company need to be fucking trading with a 24 multiple right now? Anything with the way that the stock market is, with the economy is, with the Federal Reserve? We got asteroids fucking flying past the Earth that nobody, you know, knows where they're going to go. There's all this crazy shit happening. People are paying 24 times... earnings, the assumption that, you know, the next 24 years, these companies are going to be able to produce the way that they're doing. Like, you know, I have doubts about what will happen next week. You know, 24 times earnings. Fine. What do you pay 24 times earnings for? I would pay 24 times earnings for maybe a brand like Lululemon, which I like, which still has some growth to do. I would pay 24 times earnings for a company like Microsoft that has a software as a segment type of segment to the business that hasn't realized its full potential. I would pay 24 times earnings for Google or for Facebook or companies that have the hyper aggressive growth and are still growing. But would you pay 24 times earnings for a company who just wrote in their 10K that the consent order has impacted, and may continue to impact our business operations, including, ready for it, our net sales and profitability, right? So if those go down, all of a sudden your multiple starts creeping up from 24 if you have a $120 price target. Maybe it goes to like 30. Maybe it goes to 27. For example, the consent order imposes certain requirements regarding the verification and receipting of sales. Receipting is the word. I'm trying to make receipts is what they're saying. Receipting. Receding, I guess, is the way to say that. Of sales. And there could be no assurances that these or other requirements of the consent order, our compliance therewith, and the business procedures implemented as a result thereof will not continue to lead to reduced sales, whether as a result of undocumented sales activity or otherwise. The consent order also imposes restrictions on distributors' ability to open nutrition clubs in the United States. Additionally, the procedures described above and any other actions taken in respect of continuing compliance efforts with the consent order may continue to be costly. Okay? Now, what about that says 24 multiple to you? That says 12 multiple to me. That's what I would be thinking. I would be thinking, let's stay on the conservative side. First off, I don't think any businesses in the MLM industry should have a 24 multiple. I mean, I don't give a shit if it's LuLaRoe or if it's Rodan and Fields or any number of these scams that I continue to see on my Facebook page. None of these companies deserve a 24 multiple. Nobody really knows what the, you know, first off, it's like a giant social confidence game. So once the public starts to kind of come around to the fact that this business model may not be the most lucrative, but for the people who get in early, there's a chance that, you know, they could fall out of favor. On the other hand, there's, I think, heightened regulatory risk, although not so much under this administration. I think there's some global regulatory risk that hasn't been accounted for. And in Herbalife's case, certainly there's some new legal risk also, too. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's another lawsuit that was filed in September. And according to a Law 360 article I read on Friday, they're seeking $1 billion in damages, okay? A billion with a B. That's a lot. That's not a $23 million, Bostic settlement. $1 billion. And the lead counsel seems to have it out for the company based on what he has written in his blog and what the complaint says. And by the way, I think the complaint for that lawsuit filed in September is beautifully written and very well done. I would encourage you guys, if you haven't familiarized yourself with that lawsuit yet, really it kind of flew under the radar. It was filed in September. They're going through motions now, and I think Herbalife is trying to get it moved to another forum, or they're trying to have it dismissed outright immediately. But I would go and read the initial complaint to the September lawsuit. I think it's brilliant, and I think it's a whole backbone of this business that has not been addressed. Bill Ackman has not gone after it. It's been there the whole time. These success training seminars and extravaganzas and these, you know, big events that the company encourages people to go to hype them up. It addresses all of that, and it's a beautiful read. If the company winds up having to go through discovery, it could turn out to be very interesting, but I think there's quite some time before that happens. I think all of these motions will have to be ruled on, and that's a lengthy process. So the point is, Tim Ramey comes out and now is okay with $5.15 next year instead of $6, and let's just leave the price target at $120, you know, regardless. This is like when you see an analyst who has a price target of $60 on a stock, and he has a hold rating, and then he goes to a buy with a $58 price target. I love when shit like that happens, because it just doesn't make sense. I mean, on its face, right, it's a non sequitur. On its face, it doesn't make any sense. And that happens all the time. And these are from real analysts. This isn't from, like, Zach's investment research, which I happen to believe is an actual monkey smoking a cigarette, you know, with, like, one of those little circus hats on that the monkeys wear, and just, you know, just smoking away on a cigarette and pounding away on a typewriter. And, you know, it goes through the Zach's automated feed, and next thing you know, you got a buy rating on Mimetics, who also had their call on Friday. And going into the Mimetics, so the executives got this drawl like they got a mouthful of molasses. A bunch of good old boys from down south of my medics. We ain't doing no harm. We got these damn illegal short sellers all over the place. All we trying to do get some chicken and grits down here, my medics. You know Parker. You know Parker. Parker ain't never hurt a soul. Parker ain't never hurt a soul in his life. No, sir. No, sir, down Georgia. We never hurt a soul. So the MyMedics executives kind of casually rolled their way onto the call on Friday. And I was a little... I didn't know what to think from this call. I actually thought there would be... So going into the call, I was trying to figure out what was going to happen. They had just announced that they're conducting this internal investigation of the financials. You know those take a fucking long time. And I don't know what the specifics are, if they're bringing in a law firm or an audit firm to do it. Usually these companies bring in an outside law firm. It's a process. Even just signing the documents to get the process underway is a process. You know, that's like 3 days. Lawyers and board meetings and meeting rooms and old men with, you know, things on their desk with that fucking stupid, like, green felt underneath them. There's always some, like, you know, golf tee holder on somebody's desk. Some, I've been in these meetings. They're fucking... boring. Oh, they last forever. But anyways, when you're setting up something like that, it is not just like, hey, we'll go out and we'll retain Skadden Arps and we're going to do an internal investigation of the financials. It's not. It's a process. It's a fucking huge process to get it just underway. I mean, they send you a 15,000-page agreement, and then you have to lay out, you know, what the terms are, and you have to lay out what's expected to come of it, and what they're going to be allowed to look into, and what they're not going to be allowed to look into. And every term in the agreement has to be defined, you know, so the first paragraph is just 15,000 words in quotations, and then you have to go to, you know, the glossary. The, quote, executives want to hire the, quote, law firm to, quote, examine, quote, the books, because, quote, everybody, quote, thinks that we are, quote, committing, quote, accounting, quote, fraud. You know, and then you got to go to the glossary, you know. Fraud, as defined by, you know, 7 Triscuit crackers with cheese, it's never what you expect it is. That's why they have these glossaries, just one of these little fucking little tricks that these securities lawyers have in their annual reports and in these little documents. You always have to go and check these little esoteric definitions, you know. Was it Bill Clinton, I think, you know, what's the definition of its or something, right? That's how it gets. And it's like that for a reason. Number one, they don't want you reading the fucking agreement anyways. That's why it's filed as Exhibit 15 Trillion on an 8K that they file at 8 o'clock at night. But if you do get your hands on it, they don't want you to fucking understand what's in the thing. So I have to stop cursing too. I'm sorry. My mother, she, you know, I like your podcast, but too many F-bombs. Thanks for listening, Mom. Anyways, the point is that this process of retaining a firm to conduct an outside audit to deter, but I think this is an internal one. It doesn't matter. These things take time is the point. So I knew that the call wasn't going to be, hey, you know, we've completed our review that we just announced we were going to do 2 days ago. So I knew that wasn't going to be it. So then you got to start to think. Is there a point to even coming out and saying, you know, we're going to raise guidance or the numbers look good, when really the core of the question that's being asked is the integrity of the financials? So if you accuse me of cooking the books and I say, look, I'm going to hire somebody to go out and audit the books just so you know that I'm not cooking them. But in the meantime, I'm going to hold a conference call and tell everybody how great the accounting looks and how great the numbers are, you'd be like, well, what's the fucking point? Like, we want to get confirmation that everything has been done right and that it's been accounted for correctly before you come out and say that, you know, everything, all the numbers look great. So I didn't think that that's what they were going to do. I actually thought there was going to be like an executive resignation and maybe they would kind of start to, you know, move things around in a little bit of a bigger way, maybe do something with the board of directors, maybe, you know, have Pete maybe step to chairman or whatever. But none of that stuff happened. They got on, you know, they got on the conference call with their southern drawl. And I said, listen up, darling. The numbers are looking good down here. My medics down here in Georgia. That's all. We never heard. Nobody never heard no soul down here. My medics in Georgia. So the call was pretty much pointless. I wanted to listen to it just for curiosity. But then at 11:30, Cohodes did his own Periscope, and his own little analysis where he read from a whistleblower lawsuit for, you know, the first 30 minutes, which was interesting. There was some new stuff in there. I found far more interesting the stack of volumes of documentation that he was sitting next to on his couch. that broke down in what looked like extremely intense detail all of the different facets or all of the different angles with which regulators could go after the company if they decided to. So he holds up a package and says, hey, this is, you know, how we think they bully people. He pulls up another one and says, hey, this is how we think they're committing Medicare fraud. He holds up another one and he says, hey, this is how we think they're committing accounting fraud, volume one. Here's how they're committing accounting fraud, volume two. Here's how they're committing accounting fraud, volume three. I found Mark's Periscope to be far more interesting to watch, at least, than listening to the actual call. But I wasn't, you know, look, the stock was heavy on Friday and it was heavy on Thursday. And I think that is a result. If I had to guess as to what's driving the stock down and where I think it's going to go, I think, you know, this is all just opinion and not financial advice. I don't have my disclaimer done for the beginning of my podcast. But it's going to sound something like, you know, QTR is not a financial advisor. QTR has no idea what the fuck he's doing. QTR was serving beer for a living 8 years ago. Don't listen to this podcast. Don't use this as investment advice. Do your research elsewhere. This podcast will self-destruct in 12 seconds. So with all of that said, what will happen is it feels like the stock is going to move down, I think, to somewhere between 5 and 7, where it will kind of sit and park until we get some further clarity on the issues. And I think what's going to drive it down is not short sellers, but I think it's going to be a product of institutional investors and larger investors that own the stock who have a fiduciary responsibility to not own it just based on the situations and circumstances. You know, when fiduciaries go out and they buy into companies, they have certain things. I don't know if they document them internally or if they make them a part of their subscription agreement or if they put them in their pitch deck when they're trying to sign people up. You know, there's certain, I don't know, triggers that would cause them to sell stock. For instance, and this is not related to MyMedics, I'm just giving an example, right? I start a hedge fund with you. We get together one day. We go out for a couple of beers. We're working on, you know, what our stop loss limits are going to be and what our drawdown limits are going to be. And you turn to me and you say, Chris, in the event that we see a CEO in a government office accepting a large bag with a dollar sign on it that is overflowing with money from a politician, and or an event where an executive is seen handing over a large sack with a dollar sign on it to a politician, you know, like they did in the old gangster movies, a guy always had two sacks with two big dollar signs on them. And then when they go drink beer with three X's on the can, it didn't even say fucking beer, and it was just XXX. In the event that we see that, maybe we should reconsider our long position in this company. So that, to some degree, is what many fiduciaries, I think, are going through in their heads right now and trying to figure out whether or not they can hold the stock. I mean, this, I don't think this is short sellers coming in here and shorting the stock at $7 or $8 and driving it down. I think this is legitimate institutional selling. The volume has been robust, and I think, you know, you can only get so much volume when you're looking for borrow, especially when a lot of the borrow is, I'm assuming, tied up already. So, you know, I think MDXG will probably head down to between 5 and 7 until we get more information from the company. And, you know, it's anybody's guess what happens next. Could be a wide range of options, none of which I'm going to go into, but they range from, in financial terms, let me see if I can get this right. They range from very bad, okay, you with me, to very good, and anywhere in between. So that is my hashtag expert equity analysis. What do you think of that? And throwing his hat in the ring to take the other side of the expert equity analysis is this article on Seeking Alpha entitled MyMedics' Conference Call on Friday Offers Positive Signals. And this is written by a guy named Trent Welsh. I love this guy. summary, management has scheduled a conference call Friday that signals possible bullish results. Could signal anything. Could signal possible bearish results. Could signal possible end of the world. Okay, bullet point two. Clearing up uncertainty and aggressively addressing short concerns has been the company's MO for years, and it continues to work. Right under that, he's got a picture of the stock chart. This stock just getting pummeled. Continues to work. Tuesday's 40% stock crash and burn was overdone, considering the information available, signaling a potential quick pullback of 10% to 20%, says Mr. Trent Welsh. Well, this was written on the 22nd, so this is an analysis of the call before it happens. So Trent Welsh was predicting a 10 to 20% bounce, and instead the stock went a lot lower. And I'm just scrolling through this. This guy's wonderful. This guy, here we go. Third, look at the timing management has scheduled for the conference call. 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. The best time to release bad news is usually any Friday after the market closes so that people have all weekend to calm down and consider the news before hitting a panic sell button, which I guess is like a regular sell button. You have a panic sell button. Having the call in the morning with hours of trading left in the day for investors to react to the news is a clear signal that the market might think the news is positive or negative, but it most likely won't be disastrous. It could be positive. It could be negative. But it most likely won't be disastrous. It's not going to be them coming on the call and saying, you know, the headquarters has burned to the ground. And it's hard to say if the market will like the news or not. But if the stock is oversold and uncertainty is cleared up, I would think the odds would tip towards a rebound in stock price as opposed to further declines. Well, Trent, you were wrong. The stock went down a lot on Friday. So I'm not going to bother reading the rest of this, but that, you know, in fashion of trying to be fair and trying to be equitable, there's the other side of the there's the other side of the case. I would invite you to go read Trent Welsh on Seeking Alpha. He's wonderful. With that being said, I did just want to review those two things and just do a quickie today. I hope it was good for you, because it was certainly good for me. But the Flyers are on in 1 hour, and I got a buddy and a bar stool that are waiting for me. So I hope you guys sincerely hope you guys have a great weekend, and I'll catch up with you early next week. I got one or two really cool guests that I think are lined up. So hopefully the next podcast will be me having an actual conversation, instead of me having a conversation with myself, which is in my world, basically how it goes all the time. It's a sad state of affairs. All right. Go Flyers. See ya.